Well, it took 35 years, but Phantom of the Opera has finally left Broadway. It was a show that I first discovered in high school, and I went on to perform Music of the Night several times in high school and college. And when I moved to New York in 2008, Phantom was certainly at the top of my list of musicals that I wanted to audition for. And I did actually get to audition for Raoul, as well as Messieurs Fermin and André, but it wasn't meant to be, I suppose. However, I've known and worked with several people who have gone on to perform in this amazing show. And one of those is Jeremy Stoll, who was with the show for 15 years. He joined me at the end of last season to share his experiences with the show. And with the closing of Phantom, I wanted to revisit that conversation and share some highlights as he talked about playing the role of Raoul and the Phantom himself. Welcome to a very special rewind episode of Why I'll Never Make It, The Phantom Edition. I'm your host, Patrick Oliver Jones, an actor and singer who first fell in love with Phantom of the Opera after discovering the highlights album of the show, and have gone on to see countless performances both in New York and on the road. And I'm taking a little time today to commemorate this wonderful show. The podcast website is whyillnevermakeit.com. where you can subscribe, donate, and find past episodes. Again, that's whyillnevermakeit.com. Welcome, Jeremy. It is a joy to see you again. It's been a few years, but I'm so glad to have you on the podcast and get to talk about a little Phantom today.
Matt, I am so glad to see you. I appreciate you having me. It's a joy to catch up on our lives because I met you at the beginning of my career.
It's nice. It's been 20 plus years now that we've known each other.
Exactly. It's wild.
And for you, you have now been with Phantom for 15 years, which has been basically your life here in the city. And so what was it that finally propelled you into Phantom to start your journey with it?
Tell you what, I struggled when I got here. I moved to New York with a hope, a dream, and a tube of chapstick. And I was booking things around town, not around town, but all over the US, little shows, 3 weeks, 6 weeks. It was a great time, but it wasn't a living. And then I got married and I felt that I needed to provide. And I was just getting by and I wasn't really providing at the time. So I decided I'm not going to do this anymore. And I decided I quit and I threw my audition book in the garbage and I was done. And I started going to school for graphic design. And then I got a call from Phantom and I said, no, thank you.
Oh, wow.
I've been in for you guys for like 10 years now, once a year, twice a year. If you don't know me, you don't want, what are we doing? What is this dance, right? So with my wife at the time said to me, why are we in New York? Why do we pay these outrageous prices and struggle like this if you're not going to go in for this audition? I was like, fine, I'll go. And I went. So they gave you the sides of every song and everything the Phantom sings. I didn't open the packet because I'd been singing it since I was 16. It's like, what do you want to hear? What tempo? What style? What kind of, you know, like I knew everything.
Yeah.
And they said Music of the Night. And I went in and I sang it. And it was funny because I sang it and they looked at me. But what was different in this audition was usually you sing for an assistant or somebody who's going through a great amount of people and picking out who they want to present. And I never got picked out. In this case, I was in front of the head conductor of England and New York, and then the head casting agents. And I stopped, I sang the song, and they looked at me and went, wow, why haven't we seen you before?
Don't you love that? Oh my gosh.
I love it. I think the steam I was able to not show the steam coming out of my ears, but it was rather frustrating. And then so after a week's worth of auditioning, I shifted gears and got that job, and my quitting didn't stick. So I then did a Broadway show.
Well, I mean, Phantom of the Opera is one of those shows. I mean, obviously, it's been around Broadway 35 years now. And for me, I mean, I discovered it when I was in high school. I bought the albums. I was obsessed with Michael Crawford, so I bought all of his album. I mean, I was like into the show. It inspired me to be like, oh, I can do this for a living. This is what I want to do. I want to be an actor. I want to go into musical theater and do this show one day. Did you have the same similar connection to it? Or when did you discover Phantom yourself?
That's a great question, man. I discovered Phantom in when I was 16, 17 in high school. That's when I started theater. I didn't know what theater was or if that was a thing at all. Like, I kind of roped into it. But then I discovered Phantom, interestingly, because my uncle loved the recording of it, the soundtrack, and he was playing it in his car the whole weekend that we were hanging out. And he put it in at first, and I went, what is that? What is this? Oh, my God. What is this? What are you listening to? It's Phantom of the Opera. What is Phantom of the Opera? What is that? By the end of the weekend, I had to have the book and the CD.
Of course.
And so I loved it. I was that kid. And then I was told that people do this for a living, and that was it. I was in. It's like, okay. You can make a living at hanging out with your friends and singing and dancing. Where do I sign up?
So when you're in New York, then Phantom finally comes along. You get it. Was this Broadway debut everything you wanted it to be?
Funny question, man. I don't know about you, but when I was younger, I always had this. Do you ever do the Tony speech in your head and how it's going to go achieve that goal? Well, I always had the idea of that when I got my first Broadway show, when I finally got the call, that I was going to basically run through the streets so happy, like, yeah, I did it, I'm here. And I actually was just like, they called and they said, we'd like to hire you. It's even worse. They called me. I went in, the audition was for the tour. And they called and said, we're not going to hire you for the tour. We'd actually like to put you in the Broadway show. And to anyone else, that would have been the greatest news on the planet. I kind of put the phone down on my shoulder and went, are you serious? After all this time, God dang it. This is whatever. Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
You were disappointed.
I was like, this is how this goes down. This is how I booked my Broadway show instead of the 45,000 auditions I've been through in the last 7 years. The one that I said no to because I don't know. But it took me a minute, maybe a half an hour, and it kind of started soaking in. And then I started calling my parents and they were excited. And so then it was all good. But at that moment, I did not run through the streets whatsoever.
Right. It kind of had to sink in about what you actually had finally accomplished. And so that was 15 years ago. And it's, you know, Phantom's been your home for a long time now. And I mean, for most Broadway performers, they hit a show, maybe a year, a few contracts, and then they move on to other shows. But you've stuck with it. What has kept you at Phantom so long?
Isn't that funny? Well, several things kept me there. Stability, because I've had a taste of struggle for a long time, and the stability was glorious. At first, I wanted to move on to the next thing. But then I really didn't want to take that risk. I want to just sit for a while. And then that became more of a while. And that became more of a while. I did get to leave. They're very nice about letting us go in and out of the show to do little projects. So I did leave and I did a big symphony of Music Man in California. I did The Hunchback of Notre Dame with Disney and their album. So I took a little stint for that. There's a few summers in Wichita. And that was fulfilling. I had my own concert while doing it. So I kind of took that job and said, you know what? I'm going to stay in here, create this stability and raise my two children that I had during the show and then do side projects as long as they'll allow it. And I think this is a fine living for me. You go in and out of love with it. And there's a struggle and there's a a mental mindset. It's not like you walk into the show every day and say, I'm super glad to be here. Some days are a struggle. You go, what's happening? Why am I'm doing the same thing every day for 15 years. And then some days you walk in and go, I've been doing the same thing every day for 15 years. And yeah. I don't know what kept me there was, how could I not be there? What else am I going to do?
Well, also, Phantom, as opposed to these other shows that only last 2, 3, maybe 5 years, Phantom has been there 35 years. So there is a stability that that show has had that most other Broadway shows do not have. So you can stay there year after year and feel like it's a home. It's your career is Phantom.
I was offered other things, other shows, and either I didn't believe it would last, and then I would be right back at the bottom looking for another job, or I didn't like it as much. If you're gonna pull me from the show that I absolutely love, it better be good. And in some cases, I thought, I don't love that show. I don't know if I want to dedicate my life or my income to that, and I don't think it's gonna last. And I was right. I watched so many shows load in, and I watched them load right back out, and and shows that passed me up too. I'd be in a final callback for a show, and they'd say, all right, well, you know, they didn't take me, and I'd watch them load in and I'd watch them load out.
Bye bye. Right.
And I was in Phantom the whole time.
Well, let's get to your first story that you wanted to cover. And this is, you know, obviously, Phantom of the Opera, the big title character himself is Phantom. And this is one of the times when you were Phantom. And one of the most iconic images of that is the big gondola ride. You know, he's taking Christine down to the depths and you have the candles and the fog all around you. But in one of the performances while you're singing Music of the Night, an unfortunate incident happened during that gondola ride. Tell us about this.
I can either confirm or deny the truth of this story. But had it happened, I can tell you.
Okay.
Oh, it's just tragic. It's one of those moments that, to give you an idea of how this moment was, I went into the office after the scene and the stage manager looked at me in absolute awe and said, I know I'm supposed to say something, but let's just bookmark this as an isolated incident and move on. I don't even know what to say. So as you described, the Phantom does take the girl, he grabs her through the mirror and he takes her down to his basement apartment to really impress her. And then they get on the gondola boat and he's floating on the lake. I'm trying to set up the scene without, without my body, it's interesting. Candles come up to the floor and there's fog and it's really spectacular. So we're on the gondola and we're doing the Phantom of the Opera scene and we stop, the boat turns around and I say to her, sing. And I was like, sing higher, sing for me. And she sings notes that dogs can only hear. It's a great scene. And then we get over to the Music of the Night and it's a very cool, dark, mysterious song. It's slow and it's got all the dynamics and high and a lot of falsetto notes and just the most beautiful setup ever. At the end of the scene, the Phantom reveals a mannequin dressed in a wedding dress, and the wedding dress then falls forward and she faints on the floor, right? So she's laying on the floor because that's her staging, because she's fainted. This is one of the parts of the show that I have a problem with. It's like when it gets tough, women just faint, right? It's like, oh my God, I have a daughter now. And I'm going, this is not right.
Right. But this is not what women really do.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. They will fight. So she falls on the floor and she's fainted. So the Phantom goes to cover her with his cape and he walks over to the gondola where he's done this whole swish thing. Well, he pulls off his cape and his hat and it's this absolute showmanship with the cape and he lays it so flat on the gondola. So he goes back over to pick up the cape and he swooshes the cape over her on this musical cue and it floats down in this perfect wave, like a feather falling on the ground, right? And it covers her and he says, help me make the music of the night. And he points over to the left side of the theater to, interestingly enough, an exit sign over on top of box four, whatever. That's the music of the night. And it's a beautiful scene. But this night that I did it, we did the whole thing, and she faints, and I walk over to the gondola, and I pick up my cape, and I grab it with my two hands, and I swooshed it like I'm supposed to on the music. Well, there's two little strings on the cape that wrap around our back so that it will hold over our shoulders really tightly and secure. And I swooshed the cape, but those little strings wrapped around the pole that drives the gondola. And I tell you, there is not a magician on this planet that could have done what I did. It wrapped around and I swooshed the cape and it picked up the pole. Now, this is a wood dowel. It's a 2-inch wood dowel. It's about 6 feet long. It's huge, but it picked it up and it sent it into orbit, right? It's flying across the stage helicopter blade in a perfect perpendicular, in that perfect horizontal line across the stage. And of course, that pole could have gone in the orchestra. It could have gone over off the side, but no, of course not. Why would it have gone anywhere else but right at the girl who has fainted and has closed her eyes and is laying on the stage? This thing flies and you see the audience's head go, whoa, as this is
right, because I'm sure they think like, wow, what's happening? This is cool.
Or you know, the fans who know the show are going,
oh, right. People who know the show, they're like, this is not right.
This is not the staging. So it flies over and that thing clocks her on top of the head on a perfect hit.
Oh my gosh.
And it was right on top of her head. And I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. I had to go on with the scene, obviously. So I go over to her. And what we do is we bend down to her head and we adjust the cape over her. And then we sing to her and the audience and the sign, help me make the music of the night. With that note of the night the whole time. I had to go sit down by her head in front of the audience as if nobody just saw what happened and continue the scene. And I did. And her eyes, she was fluttering. She was in so much pain and she was sitting there with tears in her eyes. And I was so embarrassed and so sad. I went on with it because we're about to have a blackout. And we sang it, and then there's the blackout, and it was a long blackout, I will tell you, because they had to go tell the understudy that she's going to be on, and they took her, into the office, and then they had to take her to the emergency room to get checked out, because that's a head injury, and then we had to go on with the show, and it was the most unbelievable scene that you could imagine. To even describe it with you now, it's like, how would you ever come up with that concept? And then at the end, I went into the office and he said, I don't even know what to say.
Right.
I guess.
Like how did that even happen?
That exactly. But now I own a part of the staging because we, as the Phantoms, we go over to the cape and we don't swoosh it from the boat. We pull it up, make sure the boat pole is not attached. Walk away right? from the boat and then do it.
Then because, swoosh.
Oh, that poor girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I assume she was okay at the end.
Yes. I was just about to say that. Thank you. She actually was just fine. The doctors were cautious, but she didn't have a terrible injury. It was just very painful at the time because she didn't even know what was happening. Her eyes are closed, laying on the floor and clock, just oof. But she's fine. Her head's fine. She forgave me. And I didn't get fired. That's the big takeaway. The second big takeaway, that she's not hurt and I didn't get fired.
So at this point, how long had you been doing the role of Phantom?
I must have been there 7-8 years by this point.
Okay. So it was like rote to you. I mean, you knew what you were doing. So it wasn't.
Yeah. It was an absolute fluke. Yeah, exactly. It was. Wow. I'm thinking about it now and I'm having like a little bit of my heart's
a little flashback.
Yeah. Like, oh God.
When doing the role of Phantom, I mean, obviously it's this iconic, like, worldwide character. Does that pressure ever come to you, or was that really toward the beginning, but now it's more settled than you?
You know what? That pressure comes to me nearly every time. Because if it's not, the audience has a great expectation. The sing through is epic, and it's hard, and not a lot of people can do it. A lot of people can do it, but not a lot of people can do it successfully and great. And so there's that pressure. And then the staging is so detailed that I get caught up in all the 5,000 things we have to do in the staging to correctly do the performance. But on top of that, my bosses are Andrew Lloyd Webber and Cameron McIntosh, and they can right. be in the audience at any time. So it's never like, yeah, I'm Phantom today. We're going to be all right. Let's just have a good time. Every day is like, I am taking this so seriously. It's iconic, and it's large, and the expectation is so big that you take care of that role like it's your mother's best china.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when it comes to your own performance, obviously, you know, as any performer, there are days when we're in great vocal shape, some days we're not. Is that a difficult role to navigate if you're not 100%?
If you're not 100%, that role is rough, and you've got to warm up, and you've got to relax, and you've got to trust it. And you can't think about what's happening in act two, where you have another 12 A flats to belt out. You have to go moment to moment and relax, because if you start getting yourself worked up, I think you drain that stamina twice as fast.
Yeah, because those last 13 minutes of the show, which are some of my favorite moments of the show, and when the climax and everything's kind of coming together for Raoul and Phantom and Christine, that's a marathon there at the end.
It's crazy. Yeah. You get used to it, though. I love that you used the word marathon, because the show is a marathon, but, you know, marathon runners get up and can do it, no problem, and then go have a beer and a steak and go back to work, because they train for it and they practice and they're in shape for it. And that's when people ask why we rehearse so much. And I think that that's one of the big reasons, and it keeps us in shape, and we are ready on a moment's notice to do an epic role without fail. And I don't know what I want to say. It's rough, but we are in great shape. That's what I want to say. We are in very good shape. I worry. You know what's funny is the pandemic happened and we all came back to work. I don't think any of us realized how good of shape we were in, because we came back to sing and we were absolutely struggling like crazy. Like, oh my God, this song is impossible. And it took a while to get back into shape and really just be able to rip it out like that 8 times a week.
Well, for story number 2, we get to the other male lead in the show, Raoul. And I believe this was one of the first times that you were doing the role of Raoul. And there's a certain bridge jump that happens where Raoul has to jump into this very small hole on the floor.
That's right.
And so on this particular night, it didn't really go exactly as planned. So describe this jump for us and why it's so nerve-wracking.
Oh my gosh. The jump it's a 15-foot jump from a bridge in the middle of the stage through the stage floor into the basement onto a crash mat. And as I gassed on, you know crash mats, because mm-hmm. that ending scene some directors want you to fall backwards on a mat, some down, but it's not the most comfortable jump of your life. It's a little unnerving because things can happen. Well, in this case, we have to jump through a cut in the stage about the size of a coffin, which you'll be in if you miss. And it takes a lot of skill to jump through that. They hire a stunt team to show you the stunt. And there's a lot of safety measures taken to make sure that we don't die. But it still feels that way. Some of the guys love it. They jump and they go, whoo! They jump up from the thing, from the bridge and into the floor. And I, every time I put my leg over, I look out into the audience and wonder if this is my last time.
Now, do you go feet first, or is it more you start to go heart?
Feet first. Yes. You go feet first. And then there's a line on the mat that you crash your heels to, and then you have to fall forward into the mat. And then there's a hydraulic lift that brings you down to the basement, because they lift the pad up. And as soon as you hit it, the hydraulic lift lowers to take you out so they can close all the doors. So I looked over, and on this night, my very first night, I was so consumed with that jump. And I thought, oh God, man, this is rough. It's fine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. The whole night I'm singing and doing the show, all I can think about was the jump. And it came to the jump, and I looked over and I jumped into the pit. And luckily, everything was fine. So I was very happy. And now we get to the ending scene, and I am lit up because that part of the show is done. I'm like, let's finish this, boys. My adrenaline it's at peak level at this point. And so if you've seen the show, you know that Raoul's in a noose at the end, because the Phantom puts a noose around his neck so that he's stuck, and then he can yell at him and sing, and they have their little trio. But I started noticing a bunch of people coming into the sides of the stage, off stage, and they're looking at me and watching the show. I'd been in the show had been open 20 years by this point, and they're watching and they're smiling. And I just couldn't help but be overwhelmed by the fact that the cast is watching from the wings after 20 years and supporting the new kid at this role. It was really sweet. And more people came, and they're just with the big smiley faces. We got to the end of the show, and we're taking our bows, and the ensemble comes out, and they all, then there are three lines. It's a huge ensemble. There's three lines of them. And then they split open the middle of the stage, and the Raoul comes in, and he turns the corner and walks straight up the middle of the stage to the audience. Well, I turned the corner to take my bow, and it was at that moment that I understood why they were smiling and laughing and having a great time, because luckily I made that jump, but my pants did not. I had split my back of my pants all the way from the top down to the back of the leg. Now,
wait, all the way down to your leg?
All the way down to the back of my knee.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
didn't feel it?
I annihilated these pants. Yeah, I didn't feel it because my adrenaline's just going nuts, right? Maybe there's a cold draft or something, but I'm not paying attention. And they're laughing. And I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of wearing these things, but there's like a dance belt involved with this costume.
Oh boy.
So I'm cheeks to the wind, dude. So I go out and I take my bow, and I'm smiling at the audience, and I'm smiling at the cast at the same time, right?
Oh, yeah. With your other cheeks, yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, I leaned into it, like, in the most literal way. I absolutely leaned into it and let them see my cheek, and they were dying. The cast fell out. I'm not the only one it happens to.
I'm sure. Well, why were you not able to get new pants or change? Is it just because of the blocking and there's just no time? Or
yeah, there's no time for it. I had that one pair of pants at the time because this is my first show.
Oh, right. Yeah, you get your one understudy clothes and that's it.
Yeah,
that's all you hit.
That's it. Oh, but now I have a spandex gusset in my pants so that it can take the force.
So it can stretch with wherever you need to go.
Boing,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a common thing for Raoul's because the force of that jump is big.
I can imagine. Yeah, and especially if you tighten up any, then you know it's got to stretch with you.
That's
you
right.
Know, it's got to move with you.
That's
oh
right.
My gosh! Now, when it comes to performing Raoul and Phantom, obviously these are the two male leads, and they're both after Christine, so that's where what they have in common. But obviously, they're different roles. How do you play both of them differently?
Oh well. Raoul is very entitled, and he kind of walks around the world like, you're welcome. Hi, I'm Raoul. You're welcome. Very Gaston, right? And So you kind of drive the evening with charm and with entitlement. And it's just, it's very, you put your shoulders back and you sing like you deserve everything that's happening to you, and you go for it. And there's concern for her. There's moments in the show where you kind of, you're not as concerned for her as much as you just tell her how to be. I'm going to fix you and I'm going to be this. And on the opposite side of that, the Phantom is very vulnerable. He kind of puts on a front where he wants everybody to think he's put together, but he's absolutely 100% insecure. And it's fun to play because everything that doesn't go the way he planned in his head takes him back, and he has to reassess the situation and try again and try this tactic and try this tactic. Where Raoul, everything I say happens. And with Phantom, everything I say doesn't happen. And it works really nicely when you have a nice partner on stage, because when they know that they need to react for you so that the story can come out the way it's supposed to, it can be rather fun. But the two parts are vastly different. You're correct. They're both tall leading men, but our journey is quite different.
And is there one that you enjoy more than the other? I mean, obviously they're very different. Oh, Phantom all the way. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Please. It's the title role of like the most successful musical of all time. There's not even a comparison. And as I advance in age, I'm interested in Raoul less and less and less.
Like, has your, I guess, growth in either role changed? As you say, with age, have you brought different nuances to both characters?
Absolutely. Yeah. As a Phantom, I've become more still and more more confident in knowing it doesn't take much to put out what you're saying. I guess there's a stillness with age that I had to earn, because I went into the show as a young puppy, and in that kind of way, and very boisterous, and now I'm calmer and do everything with intent and purpose, and I don't waste movement. And I think that's a big Hal thing. He always strived for that with the Phantoms, and it took me a long time to learn it. And with age, it came naturally.
Yeah, because there is a certain, I guess, manic approach that you can go at Phantom, because he's kind of desperate. He's trying to win her. He's a little crazy at times. So there is that. But as you say, it's really in the stillness that gives him his strength and power.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, when you're regal, if you watch people who are the English royal family, they don't waste a movement. They don't waste time. They know exactly what to say at all times. They shake your hand and nod and are very polite and move on to the next person in the best way. And then you get like rock stars who kind of approach everything like, what's up, dude? You know, and there's just this whole version of how those people approach life. And to be regal takes practice and experience, I think.
As much as you've done it now these past 15 years, you're comfortable in the role itself, but there is always still that pressure of being the Phantom. So you have to like step into it.
But you also, at the same time, there's the pressure of that you give yourself, or I give myself. I can't speak for everybody, but I want to be better every time. Every time I do it, I want to be better. And I want the next time to go even better and even better. And you're always striving towards perfection that you can never get to. Like space in the beyond, there's no end to it. But you just keep searching. You keep going.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody ever goes, I'm finally done with this role. I have completed everything I need to do. I have done it perfectly. No way. Then you fail.
Stamp it, freeze it, cut it.
There it is. Done.
Thank you so much for joining Jeremy and myself today as we talked about all things Phantom of the Opera. I'd love to hear your stories as well. I mean, you must have your own connection with this long-running musical. Maybe you loved it, maybe you hated it. I just know that I would love to hear any experiences that you've had in connection with this iconic show. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter at WinMePodcast, or just send along an email,
to whyillnevermakeit@gmail.com.
Well, I'm your host, Patrick Oliver Jones, in charge of writing, editing, and producing this podcast. Background music is by Blue Dot Sessions and John Bartman. And stay tuned next time as we talk more about Why I'll Never Make It.